We are back. It is 2019. The best part about this year, other than a fresh start, is that Hermione is now the Minister of Magic. Woo-hoo. Oh my god. Honestly, that is so exciting. She worked so hard for that. I am so proud of her.
Me too.
Obviously, we're going off of what Cursed Child said for the timeline.
But that's like one of the few things that I have heard about Cursed Child and being like, yep, that sounds legit.
Yeah. It's one of, no, I think it actually is the only part of Cursed Child that I was like, I will accept that. Yeah. That is canon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so other than that, we're actually so excited to be back because we are about to start our second series. Woohoo! Our first series, if you haven't listened to it, that is our Golden Trio series. It's back many, many, many episodes, but it's been a while, and we're just so excited. We are starting a series segment. So after this series, we'll have two other pre-planned series, and then we'll kind of probably get back into regular episodes because these are going to be long.
Real
long.
But I think this, it's a good way to start out 2019, ambitious and all, you know?
Yeah, we had to get this podcast rolling again because the last couple episodes have been either sad or just some housekeeping stuff. So, like, this is some content, guys. Woo-hoo! Content. I know. You are so welcome. Yeah, for real, though. We decided that instead of starting with death in the Harry Potter series, which is coming up, we're going to start with relationships.
Sarah asked, like, should we start with death for our first episodes in 2019? And I was like, Sarah, we cannot start a new year talking about, like, the most morbid subject of all time. Let's talk about, please, something else.
I mean, I don't know. I view death very differently than other people. It doesn't bother me all that much. Everyone dies. It's just, I don't know.
Yes, but it's not something that, like, most people are just like, let's talk about death. Let's try to keep it happy, at least at the beginning of 2019, okay?
Whatever. So anyways, we're going to be doing the relationship series. It's going to be long because we decided it would be a total disservice to the story to only hit romantic relationships because there are a variety of relationships throughout the series that are crucial to the story, that are essential to character building, and that we as readers fell in love with. So we're going to do romantic relationships, friendships, and then we'll also do, like, professional relationships. Because there are quite a few that are, like, very, very important.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing those in different segments. So we're going to start with romantic relationships because they're fun. And as always,
they're probably one of the most prominent.
Really. Yeah, they are. I mean, obviously, one of the central points of the story is a friendship. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's... For a book that's very lackluster in the sexual department, they got a lot of romance going on, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
But there will be, before we get any further, spoilers, content, language, and opinions. It's mostly just me talking about how sorry I am that I'm so mean to Lavender Brown. But we won't get to her this week because we're going to start, we kind of broke it into two categories because there are a lot of relationships, romantic relationships. So we're going to do the quote adult relationships this episode, and then next episode we will do the younger generation relationships. There's just too many to do in one episode.
Yeah.
So we're gonna kind of break it up.
And with the adult relationships, so we're not going into like Harry as an adult relationship. We're going
no.
to like the original series if they're already adult.
Yeah. They're yes. So that's kind of how we broke it up. Before we dive into it, we do have a weekly wizarding question. And this is not my best work, but it is something I wonder about because when societies are formed, at least when Western societies are formed, the first thing that they would put up is a jail. And then the second thing they would put up is a cemetery. Like that's the first part of towns that were ever established. And then everything else would kind of build around that. So we know about one wizarding prison jail confinement establishment. It's Azkaban.
Yeah.
Are there other prisons like it? Or do people from all over the world send their prisoners to Azkaban? Because we hear about other wizarding schools, but I don't think we ever hear about another wizarding prison.
Yeah, so the only one that I, like, us getting any kind of indication of was in the latest Fantastic Beasts movie, where, obviously, this isn't a spoiler, where Grindelwald is held in America. That's it. That's the only thing we know.
Right. So. And And I don't know, is he held in prison? Or, because if you've seen the movie, it kind of looks like he's being held just like somewhere inside office. The ministry. Well, it's not the ministry, inside of Makusa. Like, he's not sent to an exterior facility. So maybe other places don't do what the European Wizarding World does, or at least the British Wizarding World does, in terms of having a separate location for them. Because we know, the Ministry of Magic holds people in confinement for trial purposes, but it's not, a long-term thing. Like, it doesn't matter what the crime is. If you're going to prison, you go to Azkaban, which I think is weird. But they don't really hold people internally.
And in the first Fantastic Beasts movie, we see, with Newt and Tina, they're about to get, not obliviated, the extreme form of obliviation. Mm-hmm. But, so it seemed like they almost handle, capital punishment in
everything the Makusa. In-house. They do a lot in-house. So we don't hear of a wizarding prison. No one, it's not like it pops up like a firm name for other institutions that we hear about. But we also don't get a good read on the actual composition of the prisoners in Azkaban. Of the people that we know about, it's mostly, Sirius Black and Bellatrix. And that's and I guess Barty Crouch Jr. And but there's so many more people in there. We know it's full.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many people it holds. We know who polices it, but there's not a lot that we know about it. So I would like to know more about the prison system, because it seems one, the society's got some weird rules on who goes to prison and who doesn't.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
And two, that I feel like it would be more talked about, because there's so many characters who at some point did a stint in Azkaban that I would like to know more about it.
Same.
Me too. So if you guys have some sort of insight on the prison system, let us know.
Yep. Because we obviously know a lot about the prison system elsewhere. We're talking about a Harry Potter podcast, such criminals. Okay.
Yeah. Don't send me something about the U.S. prison system. I know how that one works. That's not what I'm looking for. I want to know about
the magical prison system.
Yes. I want to know about the literary genius of it. Honestly, just to wrap this up, I looked all over for it. It's not even on Pottermore. There's almost no information about Azkaban, and there's very little Reddit about it, which if you've been to the Harry Potter section of Reddit, there's a ton. You could get anything you want to know, you can know. And there just isn't anything about it. So someone start that. And
Which is so weird because you said, we know so many characters in this book that have been
so many characters. I mean, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, it's kind of a big thing. It's one of the book titles. It's a big deal,
But it's just never really talked about in depth.
Yeah. So, totally switching from prison, let's talk about romantic relationships. We are doing part one. That's our romance. And we're going to do adult relationships. And when we say adult, we don't mean that any of the relationships that we talk about in the younger generation are non-consensual. All the relationships that we are going to touch on, albeit one, there is one that I do maintain is non-consensual in a way, but they're all consensual. Everyone's in the right ages to be doing what they're doing, so that's not an issue. Now,
consent.
As a preface, this is heteronormative as fuck. Okay, if you were hoping for representation of any of the LGBTQ community, this is not the book for you. Now, there are tons of fanfics dedicated to branching out. You can find that all over the place. But unfortunately, there aren't any in the text, so there's none for us to talk about. We personally, on this podcast, would have loved to have seen more representation in the books. I know when the original series was written, it wasn't a subject that had really broached a lot of literature yet. And so it doesn't make sense that they're not in the books. I mean, obviously writers can put whatever they want in their stories, but in the context of the social norms at the time, it makes sense that they're not in the books. However, Cursed Child came out, and it started to hint that maybe there would be some other representation of relationships. I don't want to talk about that too much because I don't want to spoil it for anyone, because we will talk about First Child eventually. But it never gave that fulfillment in terms right. of a story. So just, we know.
Okay? However.
We know.
Yeah. However, there have been some things that JK said recently and with the Fantastic Beasts series that hint at a not so heteronormative relationship.
Yeah, we got one.
I'm excited about. Yeah.
We got one, and we didn't even know that we had this one until in the original, when you're reading the original series, you got no clue. She None. Had to come out and you're like, "Oh, maybe." She had to come out and say it. So
yeah.
Okay.
But I like that she did. So anyways.
I like that she did because I was thinking it anyways, and it kind of Me confirmed too. That I was reading the story as intended. Which, you know, I like to read books in the way that the author intends them. Right. So we have plenty of adult relationships that we're gonna talk about. For each of the relationships, we're gonna let you know what their status is. So are they married? Are they dating? Are they undefined, but there's a lot of sexual tension. That's more for next week's episodes.
Yeah.
Because most of the ones we talk about today are firm.
Yeah.
Then we're going to tell you whether or not we think the relationship works and why that is. Then we're going to tell you what we think the best part of the relationship is and what the worst part of the relationship is.
Woohoo.
Yeah, that's a lot. But now it's only natural that we start with Lily and James. Lily and James Potter, obviously they're married. They're married when we, quote, meet them. They're also dead when we meet them.
Yeah.
But they are married.
Remember how we said we're not going to start out with death?
Okay, so they're dead. Whoops. If they weren't dead, we don't have a story, though. So, True. Good for them.
Way to take one for the team.
But for real, though. So Lily and James, they meet at Hogwarts. They hate each other. They hate each other. They hate each other. Then they're married. That I don't the relationship works as we know it, but I've always questioned how they ended up getting together, because there's a very short period of time between all the hate that's described and the despise that Lily has for him.
Yeah.
And then they're fucking married. I don't know what happened. I mean, I guess boys do hit that weird point, like somewhere between 18 and 22, where all of a sudden one day they're just like a much different individual sometimes. Yeah. So maybe that happened with him.
And it's also hinted at when they're younger, is that half the douchey stuff he does is trying to impress Lily.
Yeah.
And they realize hey, this isn't the way to impress a girl.
Yeah. No. We think the relationship works, and we yep. think it works because once he's kind of once James is out of his kind of douchey phase, they seem to bring out very good qualities in each other, as far yeah. as we know. We don't get to see a lot of their relationship because obviously the relationship happened in the past. We are begging for a Marauders series.
Oh, begging for it. He's begging for it. I want
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that was very sexual to me.
I know, that's why I said it. We're talking about romantic relationships.
I know. But we know they meet, obviously, when they're pretty young. They meet at Hogwarts. There's a lot of the very stereotypical tension of he's mean to you because he likes you. And James kind of shows off for her the whole time. And Lily's not all that interested. And then they end up getting together and they have a baby and they seem very happy. I think the best part of their relationship is that Lily also loves James's friends.
Yes, that's super important.
We don't really get the idea that Lily had a lot of her own friends, which I think is strange, because she seemed like a very likable person. We know her professors liked her a lot. We know Slughorn had a particular soft spot for her. We know that a lot of her professors considered her to be very bright, very polite, witty, just a really well-rounded individual. So maybe the worst part of the relationship for me is that Lily is defined by her relationships.
Yes.
And not by her own accolades. But the best part is that we really get the idea that Lily embraced the fact that James had two very, very close friends, freakishly best friendy friends ever. Yeah. And that she just embraced them. Because we also see that it meant a lot to James that she was so welcoming and open to Sirius and Remus. And they wanted to be a part of Harry's life. And so that's the best part, is that they brought out really good qualities, but she really embraced his life.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I would have liked to have seen her have a social network, a support network. We know that both their parents die before Harry's born. Both of the grandparents on both sides die before Harry's born. And we know that Lily is pretty much estranged from her remaining family. But I don't know. There aren't any like bad qualities about the relationship as far as we see it.
Yeah. And just on another note, maybe if Lily had some own friends, they would have a different seeker keeper and we wouldn't be here. You know?
Yeah. Delaney, you got to let that go.
I don't like him. He brings a bad name to Gryffindor.
Oh my gosh. So I would say overall, excellent relationship. I wish we had a little bit more about it. We knew a little more about it. There was a little more writing about it. But from what we read, it seems like a pretty typical... I kind of get like a small town relationship vibe from it. Like they hate each other, they hate each other. And then all of a sudden they're like married and have a baby. But it doesn't seem like there are any particularly toxic traits, which there are a lot of relationships that do exhibit some very toxic traits. So
yeah, no, they seem pretty chill.
Yeah. So good for them. Next, the only living family member of Lily's that we know of, I'm pretty sure. Petunia and Vernon Dursley. I always say Dudley. So they're married when we meet them. There are two horrible people, but I mean, I can't see them with anybody else.
No, I think they work very well together.
I think the relationship works. I think the relationship is bad, but
not for each other.
They're bad people, but together, that's the best it's gonna get, I think.
Yeah.
Now I do. The best part of the relationship is that they tolerate each other for me.
Yeah.
The worst part about their relationship for me is that I do kind of get the idea that Vernon's like maybe a little abusive.
See, I don't get that. I don't see that at all.
Not physically abusive, but I do think he can kind of be a little verbally mean. Not in the context of when we meet them, but like when they got together. I think the way that they got together, because basically, Petunia feels abandoned by her whole family. Her parents die. Her sister she like hates, and then she's like, "I'm gonna date this dude."
Yeah, I don't. I don't really see him as being abusive to Petunia. I see both of them being abusive, obviously, to Harry.
Together, yeah. I mean, I've always questioned relationships where one person was pretty complicit with the fact that another person was being like really shitty to people. So, although Petunia doesn't do as much to Harry as Vernon does.
But she also doesn't seem very bothered by it.
No, she's not very bothered by it. So, I mean, the relationship works.
Right. For each other.
For each other. I would put it dead last in terms, second to last in terms of relationships that I would want to be a part of.
For sure. But I almost feel like they bring out the worst in each other, but they also, it's not like.
But they're also very loyal. They have the same shitty qualities. Like, they both are so nosy and so weird to their neighbors. And they value, like, their privacy, but also the invasion of others' privacy.
Their values are thoroughly aligned.
They need to sort out their priorities.
They need to sort out. Yeah.
So.
But, it's a weird one because, like you said, it works, but, like, it doesn't work for anybody else involved.
Yeah, you literally hate everything about them, and you're like, oh, but, you know, they'll never get divorced.
No, never.
So, this next one is the only... So, my side note is, this is here begrudgingly because it was a one-sided relationship, like, forever and always. Lily and Snape, and the only reason we put it in here is because there's so many people who feel like this was a thing. They never dated.
No.
Lily never crushed on him. For Lily, it was always strictly friendship. We see it in the books. We'll have, like, flashbacks and we'll have memories. And, like, Lily is like, oh, it's not like that.
And I'm not even sure that Snape ever told Lily how he feels.
No. To the best of my knowledge, he doesn't. He is like, I can't believe you're going to be with James. And she's like, you kind of got to let me do my own thing. And Snape's like,
Yeah. So this whole love and everything, this huge like relationship that some people take away as one of the biggest parts of the books.
Yeah.
Lily didn't even know that he felt that way never verbalized.
Lily was not a part of it. She did not consent to this love.
No.
So their status is, there isn't one. It's unrequited love at best. Yeah. I don't think the relationship works because there isn't a relationship. Yeah. I don't think there's any good parts of the relationship because although they were very, very good friends, Snape was very possessive and he never wanted Lily to have other friends or like other people or date anyone else. Snape was the one who started to drive the wedge between Petunia and Lily.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was just toxic, toxic, toxic. And then when Lily was like, hey, I actually am going to go date this Potter dude, Snape was like, fuck that. When Lily stands up for Snape, Snape is like very rude to her. Yeah. And like that right there to me shows that like Lily is totally in the friendship mode. She's defending her friend. And the only reason that it's so hurtful to Snape that she is in fact defending him is because he's like, oh, the woman I love is having to defend me. So obviously there's a huge disconnect there. Huge. Yeah. Big old disconnect.
And I think the only reason that even their friendship works is purely because of who Lily is. She's so nice and like understanding and sees the best in people. That's the only reason I feel like we could be friends with.
Yeah. Period. Because we don't, Snape doesn't have any other friends. Right. Until he becomes a Death Eater. And even then, he's not, like, totally about it, so...
No, people still kind of hate him.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So, 0 out of 10.
0 out of 10.
Maybe minus one.
Yeah.
This next relationship, though, 10 out of 10. Hell yeah. Remus Lupin out of 10. And Tonks, they date, kind of, and then they just also kind of get married. They're like
in the back scenes.
They're like not together. He's like pushing her off and pushing her off, and then all of a sudden they're like kind of together, and then bam, married. And you're like, oh, good for them.
Yeah, I do absolutely love all of the scenes with Tonks, and like where clearly you see what's starting to go on, and then her Patronus changes, and I love all that.
Yes, I think it's very cute. They get married in, Deathly Hallows, I'm pretty sure. So this is like how it all starts. Tonks is like, I don't care, I don't care, I've told you a million times, and Lupin's like, and I've told you a million times, I'm too old, too poor, and too dangerous. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, if you know Tonks, she's like, oh, you're too dangerous? Sounds like my kind of guy.
Me up.
And it's, they go through a lot of difficulties with their relationship because obviously Lupin is a werewolf. Werewolves are not really allowed to marry legally. They're not really allowed to do anything legally. So their marriage is kind of hush hush. In Deathly Hallows, anytime the ministry shows up to do stuff with like Dumbledore's will or anything like that, they have to leave because he's kind of in hiding like this whole time bit. I think their relationship works.
Oh, I love it.
I think Tonks is... Now, I don't want to at all imply that women are somehow the gatekeepers for men, the therapists for men, the redeemers of men at all. But I do think that Tonks is one of the only people that could be with Lupin. Because she is non-judgmental. She's non-conforming to stereotypes. She really just likes to see things at face value. She's like, look, Lupin is a great guy. He's brave, he's loyal, he's caring. Like, those are great qualities. I want to be with him.
And I think one thing that people tend to forget is that, first of all, Tonks is a Hufflepuff, and it's not really shown except in her relationship with Lupin, I think.
Yeah,
I think I agree. The way that she handles the relationship, the way she's very unconditional, loving, and understanding and patient, it's very Hufflepuff, and I think it comes out between them.
Yeah, and it... the tension, the back and forth tension that they have, and they have it for like several books.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot leading up to this. There's a lot of their like, and it's all in the background. So
I love it though. I love
you, until they get like married, you don't really realize that there's been so much tension with them.
Yeah.
But I love it. I think the best part of the relationship is that they truly do bring out just best possible pieces of each other.
Absolutely.
I think that one of their most beautiful moments is, and I think it's this way in the books and in the movies, is they're at the Battle of Hogwarts and they're like, yeah, we'll do this together. Obviously they die.
It doesn't end up well, but
no.
It's a nice gesture.
The only worst part kind of for me is that Lupin is, he's not self-absorbed, but he is very preoccupied by his own plight. And that makes it very difficult for him to accept the friendships and the loves outside of his very small circle that he's had his whole life. And it makes Tonks feel really badly for a really long time, which I don't.
Yeah, there are quite a few scenes where it's like kind of heartbreaking of how upset she is.
Tonks gets so depressed that she can't do magic anymore. Like, that's, for a wizard, that's the deepest, darkest level of sadness. Obviously, it comes back. But, yeah, I think they have a great relationship. I wish that Lupin had been a little more accepting of it from the beginning. I can understand why he wasn't. You know, he... No one can understand the issues that a werewolf has other than a werewolf. So, like, I can't say, you know, he really should have just been more accepting of it. Like, it's not hard. It probably was for him. But
And also knowing that you could also hurt that person.
Right.
Is really terrifying. Yeah.
So, yeah, great relationship. I dig it.
Me too. Love
it.
I
dig it.
Oh, I also love the next
one. I dig the next people too. Molly and Arthur Weasley. They're married love when we meet them. They have like 500 kids. and yet we never see them having any intimacy.
None.
Like at all. Except for maybe when he's like, and what do you call me when we're alone? Because it's their question that they ask each other to make sure that they're not talking to an imposter. The answer is Molly Wobbles, which I'm just not sure that that's like sexy. But maybe I, you know, but it is when you look at them, you're like, that's sexy for them. That's hot stuff.
Absolutely. And I like their relationship because, like you said, like there isn't any like super like intimacy. We get that with other, but this is like more than just like a romantic relationship. They're best friends.
They've got genuine friendship. They're team partners, which I love. They, the best part about their relationship for me is that they are very much so opposites, but they balance each other out because at the core, they have the same beliefs.
Yeah.
They just go about it different ways. Obviously, Molly is a lot more strict. She keeps people punctual and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And Arthur's kind of, you know, it's fun to just kind of be here. But when it comes down to it, they have the same sense of duty. They have the same strength of family. They've got a lot of very similar, very core qualities that I think makes their relationship so fabulous because I think they're an amazing parenting team.
Yeah. And I can totally see them like younger being like Molly being the one that like pull Arthur down from the clouds and Arthur like have making Molly have fun and everything. So I love that.
I do. I think that they balance each other out super nicely. There is no worse part of their relationship for me.
No, me neither. I think they're incredible.
I don't, there's no bad quality. If I had to like, really pull at one, it would be that they seem to fit very stereotypical male-female roles, but I never get the idea that Molly's dissatisfied with her domestic life.
I never get that idea, and I never get that idea that Arthur's like, your place is in the kitchen.
Yeah, I never get the idea that Arthur put her there, and I never get the idea that Molly doesn't want to be there, because Molly's got the kind of personality to me that if she really was unhappy with it, she would just be like, I'm gonna go get a job. Like, but she, I think she really enjoys being a mother. I get the idea that she, the vibe, so to speak, that she loves being a mother. She loves being there for her kids. She loves keeping the home. Like that's her thing. And feminism is great, but feminism also means embracing the idea that different women want different things. And if Molly wants to be totally domestic and Tonks wants to be totally working gal, that's all good.
Right.
That's all good with me.
As long as no one feels forced into a role.
Exactly.
Just whatever they want.
Now, there are some individual character problems because Molly kind of scoffs at women who aren't totally domestic and Tonks is like, wow, that's kind of a really boring life. Because Tonks and Molly, they're in the same circle. They don't really get along until Molly's trying to set Tonks up with Bill because she doesn't want Bill to marry Fleur because Fleur is like, she looks at her like an airhead. So there is a individual personality flaw with Molly that she's like, she's like that. And we'll talk about that in another episode probably. But as a couple,
I think they're probably the best representation, like the best thing to shoot for in the entire series.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're great.
Yeah. So, and the next one you kind of just touched on is Bill and Fleur.
So they are not together. We meet the characters separately. They're not together. Then they have some interaction in Goblet of Fire, because Fleur is obviously one of the Triwizard champions. And then they kind of date and they date, and then they get married in Deathly Hallows. They get married right at the beginning of the book. And I gotta say, I dig their relationship. I think it totally works.
Yeah, I like it too. I don't know why people like hate it so much. I think it's maybe because like when they got together was very behind the scenes, and like all of a sudden, oh, Fleur's back, and why is she back? She's dating Bill, you know?
Yeah, I think, well, okay, one, I think we have an issue with it because Bill, for me, is, like, totally the coolest Weasley.
Oh, my God.
He's, like, super hot and, like, he, like, does crazy stuff for a living, and he's, like, really nice and loves his mom. Like, we love Bill.
Yeah.
And from the, if you just watch the movies, Fleur's character is blah. She's very blah. But in the books, they have a very deep affection for each other. Yeah. He gets severely maimed by a werewolf, severely, to the point where he's not super hot anymore. And Fleur loves him for what is deep inside of him, and thinks that he is still the most handsome, most amazing man in the world. And she puts a lot out there in order to be with him. She moves and leaves her family because she's obviously not from where they're from. She's learning English. She's trying to work at a bank. Like, she's a career girl. Like, she doesn't have to work, but she decides she's going to work. She gets a lot of shit from the Weasley women and from Hermione. That puts a lot of tension on the relationship. But I think they have a genuine love and affection for each other. I think that's one of the best parts about the relationship, is that despite the criticism and cynicism from outside of the relationship, the two of them recognize what they have, and I think it's very beautiful what they have.
Yeah, and I think that Fleur gets a lot of shit for being, like, vain, but I think the way that she treats Bill before and after the incident just shows you that, like, she's not really as vain as we try to make her out to be. And she truly loves him for him.
Oh, she totally does. And even if she is if she's vain as an individual, I think that that's just a cultural difference, because she's a quarter Vila. She's from a society that is, like, all about being pretty and having a power over people. Oh, I just hit my mic. Sorry, guys. And I think some of the animosity that she gets from other people is that, one, everyone is attracted to her. All of the males are attracted to her. And no one likes it when their partner is attracted to someone else. It doesn't mean anything's going to happen. But, you know, it doesn't make you feel good.
Right.
And I think... I know that Molly thinks that she has used her Vila powers to seduce Bill, and that's not at all what happened.
No, definitely.
No,
and
I think
they have a lot in common, like, in general. Like, he's a curse breaker, and she was a champion. Like, clearly they are both, like,
they're like adventurous souls. They seem like the couple that would, like, go do shit on the weekends in the mountains. Like, yeah, I like that. I really like them together. I think that it's unfair that they have so many challenges. I don't know that there's any, like, yeah, I think so too. I don't know that there's any bad parts about their relationship for me,
other than just, like, the really bad tension between families, because that can really break up a relationship.
Yeah, that can tear a relationship up real quick, especially because we know Fleur has a very big dedication to her family. She's really close with her sister. She seems to really love her parents. And obviously the Weasley family is, like, the Weasley clan. They're super close. So that tension's really difficult, but
I think that once they get to the wedding, it's, like, chill.
Well, yeah, once they're married and there's no turning back, it's all good.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
I guess is really what matters, as long as it doesn't continue. Yeah.
Yeah. So next we've got Narcissa and Lucius Malfoy. They're married when we meet them. I don't know that we ever get any backstory on how they got together. We just know they got together.
Yeah, and we don't really get a whole lot of just Narcissa and Lucius situations.
No, we get a lot more. We get Narcissa as a mom and Lucius as a dad and a Death Eater, and that's about it.
Yeah, we don't really get them as a couple very much.
No, we don't.
But, like, judging by, like, their morals and everything, I would think that, yeah, sure.
I think the relationship, it doesn't work or not work. I think it just is. They're both from old money. They're both Slytherins. They kind of get married. I can't imagine there is any courting going on there. And Lucius has a much bigger dedication to the dark side of things. Yeah. And it really seems like Narcissa has a much bigger dedication to her role as a mother Because say what you want, she's a mom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we know that, like, obviously Lucius is in the inner circle of Death Eaters. Narcissa is a Death Eater, but she never gets a tattoo. So she's, like, kind of a Death Eater, kind of not a Death Eater. So yeah. I don't have a lot to say about their relationship other than they seem to work together. I think it's more of that kind of old bunny, we get married because it keeps the power in a condensed vacuum. The worst part about their relationship is that Lucius does not have the family loyalty that she does.
Right.
That's the worst part for me.
Yeah, I agree. He seems to be more loyal to what he wants and his ambition than, like, his family.
Yeah.
But I guess at the end he comes around.
Kind of. Ew. Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm like, I'm all congested. All right, so we are going to talk about our one non-heteronormative couple.
Woot, woot.
Woot, woot. Dumbledore and Grindelwald. Obviously, mm-hmm. we are entering the era of hopefully finding out a lot more about their relationship.
Which I'm so excited for.
I'm very excited for. We know from the original series that they were really good friends, that they kind of made like a magical little club together that was a lot darker than we originally knew, and that they had a big falling out and there was a big war. It was actually the first wizarding war, was the two of them fighting.
Which, wow, two guys fighting creates an entire war. Damn.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking, it doesn't really seem like a war, but Grindelwald does kill like a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Grindelwald is, I think, scarier than Voldemort because an even larger portion of the wizarding world thought that Grindelwald was doing the right thing.
Yes.
It was very Nazi-esque. Yes. Where they're like, oh, he thinks that we're like better than these people, and I agree with him.
Yeah. And it's terrifying how many people and what kinds of people actually agreed with Grindelwald.
Yes. And if you watch the new Crimes of Grindelwald movie in the Fantastic Beasts series, you'll learn a lot more about that. But
yep,
we won't go for that. We know from what JK has come out and said that they dated and that Dumbledore is gay.
Yep.
But we do not know almost anything about the relationship other than something went tragically wrong for them. So the status is dated, but then also became mortal enemies. I don't think the relationship works. I feel like Dumbledore he used to be a lot more of a believer and he felt like it would work. And I think he kind of got hoodwinked into it.
Yeah. I agree. I think it was more of like a gradual and like, I love this guy and like, we're friends. And then like, it started gradually creeping into like the really dark place. And then,
and then
wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. And then it got to the point where like, it really broke Dumbledore as far as we know, that this person that he truly had deep affection and friendship for turned out to be like crazy. The worst part,
which we also always know that Dumbledore like has a huge like deep like guilt for, so
yeah,
I can't imagine the situation affected Dumbledore.
The worst part of the relationship for me is that I've always gotten the idea that Dumbledore was very manipulated in the relationship. Not to say that Dumbledore is at all a weak individual, but people do crazy things for love. There really is no best part of the relationship for me for this, other than we get just a little hint of non-heteronormative representation.
Yeah, the non-heteronormative representation is probably the best part, but I can also say that maybe Dumbledore is who he is because of what he went through with
I do agree with that. Although you think he'd be like more cautious about people who have dark ideas after that whole thing.
Yeah, but also maybe because of his relationship with Grindelwald, he can see past people's affinity for things like that, and he can maybe try to like see the best in people. I don't know, maybe that's part of it, because he realizes that just because someone falls in with like a dark path doesn't mean they're a bad person. Maybe that's why he ends up accepting Snape again, you know, all that. So maybe he's a little more understanding. I don't know.
Anywho. So this next relationship, we know almost nothing about, but they are in there. So it's Frank and Alice Longbottom. They're married when we meet them. They're also permanently institutionalized at St. Mungo's they were basically tortured into insanity. The only thing we really know is that they loved each other very much. and that they were members of the Order of the Phoenix, which to us would indicate they were brave individuals who felt the need to take up the cause against the dark forces that were encircling their society in that time.
And they were tortured, and they didn't
give it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had a great son. So I would assume the relationship worked.
Yeah.
And that there were not a lot of negative qualities. I would say probably the worst part about that relationship was Neville's grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
So that's really all I have to say on them. But I wanted to touch on them for comprehensive sake.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing, too, is that we do see that the grandmother is horrible. But I think we need to give her some slack because I think it's hinted at that she absolutely loved her son and her. Is it her daughter-in-law? Yeah. Whatever. She loved them. It's after years and years of realizing that these people that she loved and cared about are kind of dead. Like the people
she knows. Gone, but there. I think that's hard. And we've talked about that before, that Neville's situation to me is harder than Harry's situation because Harry can grieve and mourn his parents' death. They're gone. But Neville had to grieve his parents and then still see them.
Yeah.
Which I think is very difficult. So.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. So those are our firm relationships. Now we've got the non-relationships. And there's only a couple of them. Obviously, there are plenty of adult characters throughout the series that we see as individuals, but are never in romantic relationships. But there are a couple that we want to make like a quote, very special note about because they're portrayed in the books in a manner that just needs to be addressed. The first one is Sirius. Sirius is only in a relationship with himself, which is funny because he's like a notorious playboy, as far as we know, in his time at Hogwarts as a schoolboy. Yeah. But, like, we never hear of him dating anyone. He doesn't date anyone in his older age. Like, he's just by himself. Now, he was in prison for, like, ever, so it kind of cut down on the dating pool. Yeah. But we know that Sirius just, like, loves himself. He just thinks so highly of himself.
Yeah, and it's just funny. Like you said, like, he is very played up, and everybody gets the sense that he is, like, really hot and, like, a playboy and everything. But we never hear of any specific relationship. It's weird
to me. Ever. And this notion is what I would say 90% of fan fiction for Harry Potter has Sirius as a bisexual individual, which
100%
I would totally be on board.
Absolutely. So, I absolutely see it.
Yeah. So it's just Sirius and himself.
Yeah.
The next one is Charlie and his dragons. Which I don't know. He never dates as far as we know. And he's actually described in the book, like, I can't remember who says it, but someone says when describing Charlie, something to the effect of like having a total lack of interest in women and way more of an interest in dragons. So we get the idea that maybe he's asexual, maybe he could be. I mean, he may just be more interested in his job than anything else, but he loves dragons like so much. And people, he's just like, meh, meh. Yeah. But they make a special point to describe him as having just a total lack of interest in like romance and just like super into dragons.
So here's my headcanon though. Maybe it's a lack of interest in women specifically. Maybe he gay. You know?
Maybe he gay. Maybe he asexual. All we know is he is not heterosexual.
Right.
As far as we know.
I would totally be here for it if he shows up with a boyfriend one day.
I would be here for it if he walks up to Molly and he's like, you're never going to have grandkids because I think people are gross.
That too. I'm also here for that.
Not gross, but 100%. Because I just find people to be so disinteresting that it pains me. Like, that's all good. We're here for all that. Charlie, do your thing, homie. Yeah. Do your thing.
I'm totally here for somebody being like, you know what? I'm just never going to get married. Fuck it.
Yeah. So
I feel that.
Bill and Charlie really sit at the top of the cool Weasley vibe for me. Yeah. Bill is definitely more like he's got the rock star vibe. Charlie has like the rustic outdoorsy vibe for me. But I always got the idea that Bill was like way hotter. So it kind of goes like Bill, Charlie and the twins, everyone else for me.
Yeah.
I mean, Ginny is the best Weasley. She got all the good qualities from all the brothers.
Yeah, she does have a lot of the qualities of the other siblings. I still love her. I do love Ron, and I think that he grows into a great person.
Well, we will talk about how problematic I find Ron and Hermione's relationship next week.
Yep.
Okay, so then this last person we threw in because we know she's married or was married, but McGonagall. McGonagall, one, kick-ass Quidditch player back in her day. Hell yeah, girlfriend. Yep. Two, she was married. Well, she liked a muggle, but they couldn't get married at the time.
Yeah, she was in love with a muggle, and I'm pretty sure he asked her to marry him, and she was like,
can't really do that.
Yeah, I can't. I think it was because he didn't know that she was a witch, and so here's the thing. Her father was a muggle, and her mother made her, and I believe it was her sister, all hide their powers from her father, and she didn't want to have that kind of relationship, like that kind of marriage, so she was like, nah, brah, and then went to school. And then became a teacher.
Yeah.
And she ended up getting married to another guy when they were in their older age.
Late age marriage. And he was a wizard as far as we know.
He was a wizard, 100%, yes.
Yeah. So,
I can't remember if he was a professor or not, but he was a wizard.
I gotta cough so much, guys.
They had to have Hogsmeade.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So not really like a non-relationship because she did have relationships, but she doesn't have relationships when we know her. McGonagall seems like she would just be a cool chick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
none of this that we talked about, you know, her marriage that only lasted like a couple years or whatever, and then like her love for this muggle guy, none of it was mentioned in the actual series. So in the actual series, we don't see her any kind of relationship at all.
At all. Except for with her academics, so
right.
I think if I'm correct, those are all our adult relationships that we came up with.
Yep, it is.
Cool. So that tentatively wraps up, unless you guys have further input, part one of romance in our relationship series. I liked it.
We got a lot of
good relationships. I dig it.
Me too.
Next week, we're going to take a much closer look at the romantic relationships of the younger generation, and it's just going to be me talking about how great Hermione and Krum were.
Yeah.
I think
that episode is really going to be opinion heavy.
Much more so than this week's. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We would love some feedback. We appreciate you listening. No matter where you're listening, we know that there's an option to subscribe or rate or review. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and give us 5 beautiful stars. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Are you going to die?
Oh, my God. I'm going to die if you don't give us 5 stars. I'm so sorry, everyone. This might get edited out.
Just because you said, I'm going to die if you don't give us 5 stars.
Great segue. It really does help the podcast out. It helps other people find us, and it helps us not get lost in the sea of podcasts.
Helps us feel good.
Oh yeah, we like feeling good. Okay, no one loves us on a regular basis, so we want you to love us. You can always reach us with questions, comments, critiques, any feedback, anything whatsoever at Lumos Maxima Pod on Twitter, Lumos Maxima Podcast on Insta, and by email at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. If you have any relationships that we miss, if you have relationships that you think that we have just very improperly interpreted, let us know. We want to know. We will totally chat about them next week in our opening segments before we get into the younger generation relationships. So also, do not hesitate.
Yeah. Also, send us ideas for other shorter episodes that come after, or maybe even between a couple.
We'll probably do between. So once we finish our relationships, we'll do a couple regular episodes, and then we'll get into our death.
Yeah. So
super hyped.
Send episodes ideas, because we've talked about a lot already.
Yeah, our list is getting, when we started the podcast, we made this huge list, and we're like, oh my God, we're going to have episodes for like ever. And we've talked about almost all of them.
And then the other
it just seemed like a lot.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that you and I have talked about Harry Potter for so long, and that's kind of why we wanted to decide to make the podcast, because we're like, we're having these conversations anyways, let's record it. Yeah. But I think we think the same way about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So getting some like extra ideas would be really cool.
Yes, we will eventually do our character series, and we will bring other people onto the podcast that we know have vastly different opinions than we do, because we can't do a shit on Snape episode unless we have someone there to defend him. So we do have someone that we think would be a really good fit for that, who is a Snape lover. So when the time comes, we will start bringing people onto the podcast. I'm gonna have to work out the logistics of that, because I've never invited anyone onto a podcast before.
Yeah, so we'll figure it out. I have some other ideas for bringing guests too on different subjects. I will talk to you about that later, Sarah.
I'm so excited. Also, if you have another Harry Potter podcast that you adore that you think that we should do an episode with, you should tell us.
Ooh, yes.
Because if you listen to our episode a couple episodes ago, Potterotica is no longer Potterotica. It is now Fangasm. Good for them.
Yep.
I would love to do an episode with them. We're not big enough podcast for that, but we would die.
I would absolutely
die. We would die. So anyways, as always, give us feedback. We'd love to interact with you. And we will catch you guys next week for the younger generation romantic relationships. And man, let me tell you, they bad at it.
They're real bad at it.
They're so bad at it. They can't flirt. Okay. They can't communicate. It's going to be good.
It's okay. Neither can I. It's fine.
You guys have no idea how funny that is. Like this week right now. Holy shit. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.